Welcome to the Cabin Culture Podcast, where we spend a little more time diving deeper into all the fun parts of cabin culture. We like to think of this as both the material and imagined expressions of how cabin lovers, dwellers, builders, and designers wish to live a more simple and authentic life. On this episode, we're talking to Christina and Liz, the owners of a very unique rental property in Southern Maine called Camp Tall Pines. A renovated schoolhouse originally built in 1866, it is now a lakefront rental that can sleep up to five guests with a guest house coming soon. Christina and Liz spent a combined 19 years in showbiz, while Liz also has an extensive history, over 20 years in real estate. Liz started a short-term rental business in LA, pre-Airbnb, with seven different rentals, and her rentals have been featured in Sunset Magazine, Elle, GQ, Time Out, and Los Angeles Magazine. So today we're going to talk not only about Camp Tall Pines, but also about what they've learned from this background and how it can help us all run more effective rentals. Plus, we'll hear a bit more about why Maine truly is the way life should be.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good.
Good now.
Is that like always the most enthusiastic when two old people can't figure out how to get on, but then they do, and then they're just like, hallelujah.
We're making it happen. Welcome officially to the podcast.
Yay.
Thanks for having us.
It's so great to have you. You're an interesting one because, and maybe we'll tackle this question first, but I'm not 100% sure if your place is a cabin, but I'm freaking obsessed with it. So we're having you on anyway. We're going to talk about it.
It's going to be controversial. We are probably not a cabin, but don't tell anybody. It's fine. They won't notice.
Nobody needs to know. Maybe we should start with the most important thing, which is that your place is located in Maine, which makes me immediately partial. But why don't you start by telling us why Maine is the way life should be?
Oh, man. Tough questions right off the bat.
I know.
Maine is great.
Oh, man. That's so much to unpack.
It's beautiful.
When did you all first discover Maine?
2018. Well, Liz's family is sort of all over the New England area, except in Maine, almost in every state but Maine. And so every time she traveled, she went to all the states to visit her family, but never Maine. And then one year she was like, you know, I've got to go to Maine. We're just going to have to make a point to go out of the way.
And we just like took a map and we just kind of went like that. And
I
didn't want to go to the ocean because I've always gone to the ocean on the East Coast. I wanted to do a lake. So
yeah.
Yes.
We were just like, and we found this random yurt on some random lake.
A little dodgy, a little scary, but it was.
Do you remember what lake it was?
Crescent Lake, I think, right?
Yeah. No, the lake was Crescent Lake. Yeah.
Okay. And it was this lady who had she was older and she had this yurt since the 70s. And she showed us like all her marketing from the 70s. It was like advertised in a newspaper for like this wellness retreat. And I don't think she had been in the yurt since the 70s because it was like so bad. You open the sheets and it's like littered with bugs, you know.
Not the way life should be.
Friendly bugs. But ironically, that we fell in love on that trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lake life. Coming from the city, I was like, what? Just the slowdown. And it really, I mean, it's funny because you said Maine is so beautiful, but it's really more like, that's the obvious, but that's not the depth. I think the depth is the mentality, the interactions that you have and the sort of expectation, the universal expectation from so many that it's about enjoying and experiencing and just being present in this moment.
Yeah.
Next week it could be hailing, or the following week it could be bug season, or it could be a perfect summer, or it's spring when you decide to plant. So I think it is a little bit of like a harmony with the seasons, because we don't have that in Los Angeles. Yeah. That it's like, we're in this moment right now, so let's go sledding. Or we're in this moment, let's go get the tacos. You know, it's like to experience that, like, whoa. Okay.
It also like becomes a different place. In the winter, you know, like in the summer, it's the water, it's, you know, there's so much to do, hiking and like, I don't know, like nature and being outdoors. And then in the winter, there's like ice skating and snowmobiling and ice fishing and Like, yeah. There's so much to do that that you can only do in one season, you know? Yes. So it's like, it's cool. It's like, I don't know. I think it's just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she's a state with many different faces, but in all moods, she's definitely like, listen, I'm here. I'm not going to apologize for how hot or how cold I am or how much my wind blows. Enjoy it. Because in 5 minutes, it'll be different. And it's like, okay.
Unapologetic. I like that.
Yes.
What a good description of the state. And I do feel like that leads to people who are just, I don't know, they're not about show. They're just about like, they're just genuine, down-to-earth people. I think the winter is when I see that the most, because you remove all the tourists and you have all the people who live there who are just like surviving together. But they're like, no, survival is not enough. We're going to figure out a way to thrive amidst whatever it is that might be out there. So we're going to ice fish. Like, yes. That does not sound fun, but it is to Mainers.
Oh, I'm so excited to learn how to ice fish. Or to go ice
skating. That's how I feel about ice skating. Yeah, I want to learn the ice skating and the like survival skills that come with it when you're ice skating on open lakes in Maine. Like you have to like be able to read ice and like.
Yeah. We were just showing Luca, our 10-year-old, a video on what to do when you fall through the ice. And I was like, kick. And, you know, Luca's in our living room. It's 70 degrees in LA. He's like, Mom, just stop. I get it.
It's hard to really like relate to the experience when you're not there. Okay. This is a good point. I know this about you. Can you tell others like where you live now and what your connection to Maine is when you first, you just told us when you first went there, but obviously we're talking to you about your cabin there. So just give us like a brief overview of that. So folks know a little bit of that background.
Yeah. So we're from Los Angeles, and after we went to Maine, we decided we wanted to come back and discover more lakes. So we came back the next year and rented an Airbnb on another lake on Frye Island, which is like an island within the lake.
Amazing.
Frye Island's so cool. And then that's when, you know, we're realtors. So we just like started like following Zillow listings in Maine.
That's a disease.
It is.
I can relate.
And we thought, well, maybe we'll buy this little cabin, you know, like a one room cabin and come spend the summers here and then rent it out when we're not here. And so that was sort of just like a dream, right? And then one day this property pops up that
mid-COVID.
Yeah, so mid-COVID.
July of 2020.
And it's like a 50-acre parcel with a house and a guest house and then this one room schoolhouse and a pool and a tennis court on a lake. And we're like, what? Like it was, the price was so reasonable to us compared to everything else I'd been seeing and definitely compared to LA real estate prices. And we're like, well, maybe we can push this and get this. And so,
is so different than a small two-season cabin. Like what you ended up with is very different.
This is the bait and switch, Janice. This is what I've been experiencing in our relationship. It's called the bait and the switch. So now we have a nice mortgage.
It was unexpected. It was totally unexpected. And we didn't even know what we were doing, you know, buying it. So
we still might not know what we're doing, but boy,
you're doing it.
Enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, we're doing it. We love it. So the schoolroom was like this 1866 one room schoolroom that is on the property that basically belonged to the city or the town until the 70s. And then the town, oh no, the 50s, I'm sorry. And then they stopped using it. I mean, so it was a one room schoolhouse and used as a schoolhouse from 1866 until 1950s. And then it sat vacant for 20 years. And in the 70s, the town asked the old owner of our property if they wanted to buy it. And so they sold it to them. And then it just sat on that, still just empty, just sitting there. And so whatever happened in the 50s, I don't know, but they just like walked away from the building. So all those, it was just like this mint museum, pristine condition museum, like all the school.
Like you walked in and there were desks.
There were desks. There was the report cards, like the books, like everything. It's like
they ended class and they just walked away and never came back.
It was really weird.
Was there writing on the chalkboard?
Well, the owner's kids had come
in. Grandkids had come through and walked
away. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it was
okay. I'm just wondering how much of a frozen, can you imagine walking in and being like, this is what they learned on the last day they were there.
Writing,
yeah.
You know,
there was, and it was all like, you know, marked Town of Shapley. Like it was all like originally from that one, you know, cause you think, well, maybe someone brought it in, but it was like all from that school room.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool.
So there was no electrical, there was no plumbing, there was no well, there was no water, there was no septic. There was this little
was the old tin
outhouse. I guess it wasn't an outhouse because it was attached. So like they don't.
It was
call
a latrine. Yeah,
so there was, but like it wasn't indoor plumbing. It was still like what you would find in an outhouse.
Two holes on a bench, like that went down into the ditch.
Yeah.
And
probably modern. And for
it was
that time
that this little. It was like a 12x24 sort of addition off the schoolroom.
Yeah.
That was like a shed, you know, and you walked it. There was two doors. And the boys went on one side and the girls went on the other side. And then there was their little bench with their holes, you know, where they went to the bathroom. So there was that. And there was a stove, you know, wood stove. And that's how they did it. Which is so wild to me that in the 50s, like people were going to school with no running water.
It was so much tougher than we are now.
Yeah.
I know. It doesn't feel like that long ago to have had a life that is so different from how we live.
It's like, wow. Yeah.
50 years has done a lot.
We've met quite a few people have come to work on the property who've said their grandparents went to school there.
Oh, so that's so Maine. I feel like small town Maine. That's just.
Our neighbor told us that you're not a local unless you've been there for three generations.
That's what my family believes. He's literally in bed the other night. We were talking about this. Sean goes, "You're not a Mainer. You don't have it in your blood." And I was like, "I sure do." And I got really defensive. And then we couldn't decide, even though I wasn't born there. But if your family was multiple generations, does it count?
Does it count?
They're real. They're very serious about that.
Yeah.
So we did end up buying the property in the middle of COVID at a time where I think there was sort of, you know, universally, I feel like the world at that point really valued time over stuff in the middle of COVID. It was like, wow, I need to see my grandparents. I don't know if they're going to make it through this.
It was actually the beginning of COVID.
This situation. Like August, we were terrified.
Yeah.
So we bought the property sight unseen with no understanding, just that something was propelling us to do this. And
wait. Okay. When you say you bought it sight unseen, did you put an offer in sight unseen or did you close having?
We put an offer.
You went in. Got it. You went there when you were under contract.
Yeah. We went and saw it before we finalized it.
We had like 24 hours left on our, you know, it was like, look at it and be done with it. There was
That visit like?
It was magical. Like, I think it'll be like one of those memories that you always remember, you know, it was like super exciting and like, yeah. It was really cool.
So you loved it as much in person as you did from a distance.
Yeah, even more so.
Oh, yeah. I think we knew immediately that parcel, that piece of property held something magical.
Yeah. It's kind of a rare property. It's just in the middle. It's not like, you know, your cabin is in a, you know, it's in a town that has like shops and like, you know, a touristy area, you know, where ours is not very, there's not like,
Shapley's rural.
Yeah, there's not really any like restaurants or anything nearby, you know, it's like pretty rural. So, you know, we have to drive 30 minutes to get a grocery store. So, but yeah, the property itself.
So yeah, we closed. We didn't really know what we were going to do. That's our beagle barking at me. I'm sorry. She's got a mind.
I can relate. A chihuahua is asleep on my lap right now. So at any moment she could decide that is no longer what she would like to be doing.
Yes. Well, Luna's decided it's time for a walk. So 10 more minutes.
Hold on. I want to go back to that moment when you saw it and that whole period when you were under contract. Okay. So you said it was like a bait and switch, but you like, you knew this was the right.
I bait and switched her. Oh. Not the property.
Right. So Liz, you didn't. Yes. Christina, you did. You felt that way.
Oh, for sure. I mean, she was like, yes. Yes. It broke everything about this property. So yes, 100%.
What did that period, how was that for your relationship as someone who was in a relationship when I bought and built the cabin? I'm really intrigued about that under contract period, the vision you were trying to justify and understand it collectively when you had different, like, how did that work?
It was denial. You know, I think that's the she was looking on Redfin every day for like 2 years from the time we visited, and she never once showed me a property. So when she showed me this one, I was like, she's super headstrong. And when she says she wants something, it's like, it happens, defies sort of like all expectations. And so I just thought this obviously isn't going to happen because we don't have this money and we can't get approved. We have, you know, for different reasons. And so I was just kind of waiting for somebody else to tell my wife it's not going to work so that I wouldn't be the bad guy. And I'd be like, oh, too bad, babe, next time, you know,
so and sorry.
But at every step, some little miracle happened. And that's, I kind of attribute this to the property, you know, and it's sort of like, oh, some other windfall happened or some sort of thing we didn't anticipate happened that sort of got us to the next stage. And suddenly it was.
So when did you start to buy in?
What's that?
When did you start to buy in?
Well, when we went on that trip, I was thinking we're going to find so many things wrong with this property. You know, it's a, don't get me wrong, it's gorgeous, babe. I love it. It's magical, but you know, probably won't close. So like, this will just be a great experience that I supported my partner through because I'm so cool, but probably not going to happen. And then we closed and it still wasn't real because you don't get the bill for 60 days. And then we went in April of 2021.
That's so true.
And that's when I was like, I didn't leave. Luca and I stayed for a year almost.
We went
1 week during spring break, but he was out of school because of COVID.
Yep.
And the day before we were flying back home, we were like so busy with real estate in LA. I was like, I can't go back. I want to stay in Maine. I'll work remotely. Luca will school remotely. And so I was there till November and Luca stayed until like September. So we basically like just
unplugged
for 8 months without any anticipation or planning. It was like,
Liz, did you move there then too? Or were you doing long distance for a year?
Yeah. Long distance.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We would go back and forth. I would go back and forth. And
yeah,
that's when I knew it was kind of like, I don't know what this place is. I don't know if this is a vacation spot, but at that point, the property in itself changed our life because
yeah.
I was like, what are we doing playing this rat race in LA for, you know, two cars or these homes or this stuff or this food or this clothes. And suddenly it was like middle of COVID, everything was happening. And I thought, actually, I just want sunsets, a cold beer, a great pond, and all the people.
Yes. That
and if this property can house all the people that I love and more, that's all that I want. I've become like addicted to the humans that we love. And I'm always like, come, I want to hoard you. Just come and stay forever.
Yeah.
That's what this property meant to us.
Yeah.
And the schoolhouse, you know, was an extension of like, now we can have strangers come and see if they also feel this way about this property, you know? And I think the uniqueness about the schoolhouse is it's not just a structure on a little piece of land. It's like, you get this sort of like door open to like the potential of all this acreage and to walk in the woods and to go take the sailboat out or kayaking for 3 hours. And it's like, that's different for me. That's it feels like an island in the middle of nowhere in the sense, cause you don't see anybody else, you know?
Yes.
So that's it. The property changed us. And now we like
packing
up and, you know, going.
Yeah. I think it does feel like there was some sort of magic spell that happened. Like the fact that like we weren't freaking out, like, why are we doing, or even asking ourselves, like, why are we doing this? Or what are we going to do? Like, we just sort of like, it was like,
that might still happen.
Oh, we don't freak
still out. Waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So yeah, it was cool. It was a life-changing sort of weird that we're in real estate and I don't think that's ever happened to us before. We're like,
one
it just changed you like that.
I don't want to say it's Maine in general, because I realize I like inflate Maine a lot in terms of like how I view it, but that's how I feel whenever I'm there. It suddenly makes me wonder, why am I doing all these things back home, working all the time, you know, running from one thing to another, when up there it does, the way you said, Christina, like time just slows down. It's hard to explain. And it does make it very hard to leave, because if given those two choices, one, like slow down days with people you care about, or the other, like really, really hustle to make money or do whatever. Like it just, it's not comparable. It makes it so sad to leave every time I'm there. So I'm sure your land is also uniquely special, but there's something about Maine, I feel like, that just does that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I want to take a couple steps back and then I want to dig more into Camp Tall Pines, which is why we're talking. But I want to take some step back because you guys have been in real estate for a really long time. And Liz, you actually have been doing short-term rentals before short-term rentals were as trendy and talked about as they are now with Airbnb. So I want you to take us back a little bit and tell us, when did you first get into the idea of hosting or short-term rentals?
Well, okay. So back in my early 20s, I couldn't afford a house, so I bought an apartment building with my brothers, and we each moved into an apartment. And we had some other units that were tenant occupied. And one of my tenants, they were all one bedrooms. One of the tenants moved. This was like 2006, 2007. She moved, and I said, "Well, why are you moving?" And she's like, "Well, we want a two bedroom because there's no hotels in the area, and when my parents come and visit, they don't have a place to stay, so we need a second bedroom, you know, for our parents." And I was like, "Oh, okay, that makes sense, you know." And she's like, "You should just furnish my apartment and rent it out short term to people like me who need a place for their parents to stay." And so she kind of planted the seed. And I was like, I said, "That sounds like a good idea, but like, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't even know like how to find those people." She's like, "You wouldn't even have to worry." She's like, "You're going to be the only person in the area doing it. Like everyone's going to find out. It'll be word of mouth." So I kind of just got it in my head that I could do it. So she moved out and another person, two people moved out at the same time, around the same time. So I furnished it and she was a designer, an interior designer. So she helped me pick out all the furniture and stuff and decorate the units. And then it was like word of mouth. I put it up on Craigslist, I think, because Craigslist had like before Airbnb, I'm sure it still does. I haven't been on Craigslist in
It hasn't changed at all. Craigslist is like exactly the same now as it was then.
It's super spammy though. You like, you know, you couldn't post on there anywhere. You just so much spam. But anyway, started on Craigslist where it's short-term rental, you know, and vacation rental, I think it was.
Yes, then, yes.
There was this website, bedandbreakfast.com. I don't think I got too many leads from them. But anyway, Craigslist, it was mostly Craigslist. And then it just like, it sort of snowballed. So then TripAdvisor now has like a whole vacation rental section. They didn't have that back then. So I thought I'm going to sort of, oh, what happened was the two did very well, these two units. And then two more people moved out. So now I had four and I was like, okay, I'm going to do, just keep going. So now I had four. Right.
Are you making more money, just to clarify, are you making more money off these short-term rentals than you are off of the year-long tenants?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, but it was also like, so it was worth it to turn more of them into that versus apartments.
Yeah. Yeah. Flash forward to a couple years ago, my brothers and I decided to go back to long-term rentals because it was too much work.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't worth it to us, but we're also a lot older. We had a lot more energy back then. So anyway, there was
that is the payoff, right? Short-term rentals can make you a lot more money, but it's a lot more work.
So much. Like my brother did laundry all day, basically. That like by the end. It was just like
yeah. So you were cleaning and flipping them yourself.
Not cleaning. We always had a cleaning person, but we were doing the laundry because that is something that like you can't pay someone to sit there all day and do the laundry.
Right.
I mean, it was like, you know, that when we got our place in Maine, I was like, "Christina, we need like four washing machines. Like one is not enough." And she was like, "You're crazy, Liz. Let's just get one." I'm like, "No, you don't understand." And I was like so stressed out about the laundry. I was like, "You don't understand. It's so stressful."
So how many washing machines do you have?
Four.
I think we actually.
If she wants it, Janice, she will get it. You can either be in her way or be behind her. Those are the only two places on the road.
Fear. I have lots of experience, so it's like I know
and choose my battles. When I choose one,
you've learned.
I haven't picked.
Yeah.
I also was like, you know, we got to get the big ones. You know, you can't get the little ones.
Yes. One of my cleaners taught me that. She's like, "Listen, Janice, this washer and dryer situation is not going to work. I need you to get like the big industrial size ones." And I was like, okay.
Yeah. It took us years to figure that out here at our LA rentals. But anyway, so we had four and I thought, okay, this is kind of like a mini hotel. Like I'm going to market this as a hotel alternative.
Yeah.
And back then, like I was really into like, eco-friendly house products and whatever. So I thought I'm going to do everything eco-friendly. Like, so I did bamboo sheets, you know, organic cotton and organic bamboo sheets and, you know, no non-toxic cleaning supplies. So I sort of marketed it as a hotel alternative, eco-friendly, you know, hotel, whatever. And Elle magazine saw maybe someone they knew, like, stayed there. I don't know, that, but they found it. And so then they did a piece on their online, you know, blog or whatever it is, website. They did the top 10 eco-friendly hotels in the U.S. And they named my little, you know.
Hell yeah.
It says what the top 10. And that kind of boosted us. And then we got it was a ripple effect after that. Like, all these people were like, eco-friendly hotel in LA, you know.
Are you booking them? Like, because, okay, we don't have Airbnb platform. You're coming through. Are you doing everything manually? Yeah, like, how are you taking money?
It's insane. Like, I don't know how, you know, we did it. So after we did,
like, messaging, even I'm thinking, like, emailing everyone with what they need and then collecting payment contracts, like, all of that feels so intimidating.
Yeah. And in the beginning, because we didn't know. So we had actually a contract that you signed, which now is so stupid, but, like, that's what we did back then. We quickly stopped that because we realized nobody wants to sign a contract when they stay at a hotel. So we just sort of took the risk of, like, you know, I think we were even charging a deposit in the beginning, and then we stopped doing that because it was just too complicated returning the deposit.
Yep.
So Airbnb has streamlined things so, like, oh my so God. Well. Like, it's just, Airbnb is amazing. But I wish we had.
But imagine you coming into the Airbnb world. You've done all this yourself. So now, like, what a leg up you have of, like, okay, if you're going to automate some of this, I have the skill set and knowledge to understand all the working pieces of literally a hotel.
Yeah, I think I got, like, the day-to-day operations down, but, like, the marketing is such a different, you know, it's just a different ballgame, you know, with Instagram and Airbnb and, like, how to, like, you know, but anyway. I think, you know, we kind of had
Google now too.
And Google, yeah.
Wasn't really.
Oh yeah, Google.
I mean, my God, that's so weird to think about. You didn't even have Google. You had, like, wasn't it called Dogpile? That was the search engine I used in college.
They had the phones that you had to hold to your face.
Yeah, people would call us to book. People would call us to book. Yeah. We were in, like, one of the airlines, you know, like, there was, I don't know which airlines it was, but they did a piece about us. Like, we were just all,
like, in the magazines.
No, like, on the screen, you know, there was a, what? Yeah, they were doing, like,
what?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Wow. You got some fame, babe.
We were in GQ.
Woo.
We were in a lot.
I have a whole list of all the places that you were published right here. Let me find it. You were published in Sunset Magazine, Elle, GQ, Time Out, and Los Angeles Magazine. I did not have your airlines feature, which feels even like a bigger deal because you've got a captive audience.
Okay. Yeah,
you don't get to, like, opt out. They're, like, sitting right there.
Yeah. Oh, buddy.
She's had enough.
Yeah. I love the side eye, the beagle side eye. That's so impressive.
In the end, we had we were up to 7 units. And after 4, I would have a full-time job as a real estate agent. So I was like, I can't do both of this. So my brothers stepped in and they were helping. And it became, like, a full-time job for both of them. To run it.
But I was wondering if you were working while doing all of this.
Yeah, I was working while doing all of it. Yeah. So, and it got too much for me. So, you know, basically they were, you know, running, doing the data operations. And then, like, by the end, it got way more automated with Airbnb. But, like, the scheduling in the beginning, like, my brother had this spreadsheet on Google, like, I don't know. It was wild. And there was double bookings that happened a lot. You know?
That would be my biggest fear right there. That would be, like, it prevents that for you now, but that would be what I, like,
you would melt down.
If would that. Wake up at night thinking about.
Yeah. No, I have so much stress. We all sort of have stress from, like, all the anxiety from all the stuff that happened. Yeah. Like, the double
book. Wouldn't even know what to do.
And, like, the stories of, like, all the wild, like, people that stayed.
Don't get into that.
Which
that's bad.
I don't think we're going to have that experience in Maine. I just feel like in LA, it's more transient. Like, it's a different type of guest that's staying here.
Yeah. People are coming for parties and celebrations and actors, writers.
Every location is so different. And every property, depending how many people you can sleep, is so different.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So let's go back to Maine then. That's a good transition. How many people, when did you launch on Airbnb? I have other questions about the renovation and getting it ready, but just since we're talking about rentals, when did you launch and how many people can you sleep? And I know you have another one in the works because you have the guest house and the schoolhouse.
Yeah. So we launched it's called a soft launch because we haven't, like, fully opened the calendar full time yet.
Yeah.
But we did a
soft launching in July while we were there. And we just did a couple of weekends and a couple of days of the week to sort of like test pricing and everything I opened up booked within like 2 weeks.
Not surprised.
And
that's amazing.
Like, okay. Okay. And then, you know, we're still a little bit back and forth. So I don't want to open it that much while we're not there. I don't know. I guess I got to like talk that out more as like our fears are, but I like the personal touch. I think that, you know, if you're going to have someone stay at your house, I know it's, you know, it's transactional and it's a business but it's also, you know, for me, the only thing that's really going to set us apart is the fact that it's like a service. You should feel cared for. And I have a trouble parlaying that to someone who it doesn't own it and love it like I do. And that there's nothing else wrong with anyone else. It's just, I want people to feel so very welcomed. So when I'm there, I'll just randomly, you know, put flowers from our property in there, or, you know, acorns and pine cones, or, you know, whatever comes out of our garden in there, or just say hi or see their dogs. So I don't want a lot of traffic through, just because I want it to be unique. And I don't know. So we're just doing a couple of weekends here and there, and people are loving it, you know?
Yes. You're doing the weekends while you're there so that you can host.
We're doing the weekends while we're in LA, just weekends. Cause I think, okay. Our staff can handle, you know, one stay a weekend, and then they have like the whole week to turn over. And if something goes wrong, we can address it. Yada, yada, yada.
Plenty of time.
Because you have to realize, like, this is the first time this property has been lived in, you know, it's the first winter it's been lived in.
It was never lived in 100 years. So it's
right.
We're kind of breaking the mold with it. And Liz went and stayed in the winter and found out it was freezing.
I went back in November and I was like, the last two guests didn't leave us reviews. I wonder, there must be something going on. So, and sure enough, like the water didn't get hot enough and the heat was not hot enough. It didn't get hot enough. So,
okay. You have the nicest guests ever if they didn't leave you a review and didn't tell you about that. I feel like if our water didn't get hot enough, we would hear about it immediately.
Just been me like overreading and, you know, like it hadn't gotten that cold yet. You know, it was just November still. Yeah. So we replaced the wood stove with a pellet stove because the wood stove wasn't working. And the guy said, it's going to be a fire or whatever. So we had to put a pellet stove in, and we thought that would be the main source of heat for the schoolroom. Cause we didn't want we wanted to keep it as original as possible.
Is it insulated?
We insulated the floors.
Okay.
So we had some guy go underneath and spray underneath, but the walls are original. The ceiling's original. So we didn't really get a chance. And then there's huge windows that are just single pane. So, and back, you know, since 1866, that room was heated with a wood stove. That's it.
Right.
I'm like, if the kids survive, then, you know, we can probably survive with this pellet stove. Well, the first night we slept there, and this was when we first put it in the summer, late summer, we turned the pellet stove on and tried to sleep in the room all night, and it was too bright, like the glow of the fire.
Oh.
And then the sound of the motor, like blowing the air, was like too loud. I was like, okay, this is not gonna work. So
That you're testing everything first and like iterating. You're like, okay, we're gonna figure out the best environment for our guests to sleep here.
It's been a learning process. And then we put a mini split in, and the mini split, that's when I went back in November and realized the mini split wasn't keeping up. It was not working when it dropped below 20. So, and I scrambled, and in November I got them to put in a Rinnai wall heater, gas wall heater.
Okay. Now you have all three of those.
Now we have all three. Yeah. Yep. So you have AC, you have this pellet stove, and then you have the Rinnai wall heater, which works amazing. So
winters in Maine for you. Like, this is our family camp that my sister and I bought. It was the same thing. It was like they said it was year round, but then we got in there and we're like, these walls barely have insulation and you don't have And we ended up doing, there's a propane one, like similar to your Rinnai. And then we put mini splits in. And the only one that I haven't won on is the wood stove. I cannot convince my sister on the wood stove, but it is like, it's hard to get any one item to keep up in Maine winters. So, and we have a generator. So you really need the like redundancy of multiple things in order, especially, I think Mainers are a tough bunch, but when you buy a house or a schoolhouse and then trying to adjust it for guests on Airbnb, it's like you got to be like it's just a different requirement, I think.
What might work for you isn't going to work. Like my uncle lives in Vermont and my aunt and uncle, they heat their house with the wood stove, you know, 24 hours a day. You know, that would
my
never
uncle work. Does that too. Right. Yeah. I could never, the way he runs his house, I could never run an Airbnb like that.
Yeah. You'd be a little bit more automated.
But to go back to the wood stove, I was like, Janice has a wood stove. I've seen all the posts on the wood stove. She says it's fine. It's safe. We should do a wood stove. I want to do a wood stove. And we ordered a wood stove and then we panicked with anxiety because we'd have so many people in the neighborhood, like, you're going to put a wood stove? The schoolhouse is going to
really?
Down. Don't do this. It's a fire hazard. These New Yorker kids are going to come in here and burn the place down. You should have been there. It's very intimidating.
Oh, that does sound intimidating.
Pivoted
but
also pellet stove.
In the beginning, that was like, going to be the only source of heat. So we were also worried that somebody wasn't going to be able to keep the wood
keep going
all night.
And the space,
it is hard as the only source of heat because of the sleeping. You do have to wake up in the middle of the night. And like Sean will do that at the cabin. We have heat too, but he likes to keep the wood stove going and he'll get up and do it.
But it also was a massive space. You know, it wasn't like small little. So
I know your space
ceilings. So it's just like, it's like a candle in the corner. It doesn't feel like anything.
Yeah, it doesn't. The house I live in Hillsborough is like 120 years old and we put in a small wood stove. But with the windows being the kind of glass you're talking about, we don't have insulation under the house. All of those things combined, the wood stove is great, but you still shiver unless you're right in front of it. Like it is hard.
Yeah. So we
candle in the corner. That's a good description.
A candle in the corner. Yeah. The wind blows. Oh, it's out. So it's good. I think it's nice and it's easy for guests. They do love like whoop, hit a button and it just runs all night.
Yeah.
But I think like in our home, I'm going to switch back. I want to switch back to wood, like in our private home, because every time I see your darn posts, I'm just like, we need wood burning. No more.
My sister felt the same way. I've been on her for years to get one at our camp and I just cannot.
Come on, baby, wood stove.
I know. I think she's an Enneagram 6. So it's like she hears one thing about someplace burning down and it's just like that's all she can think about, which is totally fair and just can't justify it. I want to go back to your posting or to your hosting because I read your listing and noticed I really like what you said about I think you can have a good team run a place. I think you can do that. I used to be in Teach for America and I did selection for them for a while. And we called it profound additional impact when an applying teacher or a teacher share the identity or background of the kids we were teaching. It's like, so it wasn't like diversity selection. It was this idea that if you share this background, you have the potential to have a profound additional impact than anyone else who's just an excellent teacher, right? And I feel that same way about hosting. Even if you have a great team and I have an amazing cleaner, people are still going to have a great experience. Yeah. But like the one time I'm there and I get to welcome them, right? Like there is a profound additional impact because I love this land and house more than anyone, right? And it sounds like I like that mindset of yours that like I will be able to give the best experience of anyone because nobody loves it more than we do, right? So in your listing, you said, we live on the premises and will be available if needed. You may also find our 10-year-old Luca and his best friend Luna running around without shoes or a shirt. This is normal. Please encourage him to wear shoes. We gave up years ago. I like laughed out loud when I read that and it made me want to stay there more than anything else I saw on your listing because it was like, the space is beautiful. The picture showed me that, but I'm going to have an experience, like a main experience with people who love this land and I get to share that with them. And I feel like that is the reason Airbnb is different than hotels.
Oh yeah.
And you did such a good job of really emphasizing that piece on your profile. Whereas I feel like so much of us are trying to work so hard to make it perfect, not hotel-like, but like reach that perfection. Yeah. And that just was like, no, we're humans and we're struggling to get our 10-year-old to wear shoes. Like, come join us.
Yeah. And a shirt too.
Yeah. No, you know, it's funny. I threw that in and I think that's because I probably feel insecure and I want people to know we are human and we live on the property. And I probably threw it in as a fear of like, if people think that they're going to be super, super private, I want to prepare them for possibly like this young Tarzan, like swinging through the trees half naked. So they're not like freaked out. So it was more like a set of expectation, but what you're saying rings so true because when I was there hosting without Liz and it was just me, people came and like this guest came with her daughter who she homeschools and they travel. And she's like, is Luca here? Cause we want to meet him. And then these other folks came and like come for dinner. And I was like, oh, I don't have enough self-confidence to like entertain you through a whole dinner. I can do like three lines over a quick meet and like charm you and I'm done. But I don't have that depth for like an hour. Trust me. Like, but they were,
I don't believe you. Fair enough.
People wanted us, Luca, Luna, me, Liz, like, I want to talk to Liz about, you know, her experience and tell me about your experience in show business. And I was like, wow, okay. People are coming because it's a property, but they're coming for connection.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And I thought I'm coming for connection. Yeah. This is something we all have in common. Like I want this too. So I was like, okay, I have to like kind of lean into that a little bit and make get in a little uncomfortable because I'm not really a people person, but I feel like inside I might have eaten somebody who is a people person because she's in there.
There's a little bit. A
little one in there that I might have had as a snack on like somewhere at craft services, like, whoop, dumb. But she's coming out. So we want to like, we're trying. And so I'm trying to be a little bit more chatty and work on it. But that's really what's pulling me.
Yeah.
Is I don't feel like I've gotten that in LA in the 40 years I've been here. But I feel like in one season, I've gotten more in Maine.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
And your property lends itself to that. I also feel like people who want to come to Maine often are a different kind of person. And also if you're going on Airbnb versus hotels, I would like to think you're looking for that. And when I first started hosting on Airbnb, it was a guest room literally like right across the hall from my bedroom where I was sleeping. So there was no avoiding that, right? But we've moved away from it a little bit. And I see it in the cabin world, including my own, with these high-end properties where we're like minimizing contact almost a little bit, right? There's like a key code so you don't have to message me. It's like if I do everything right, I won't get any messages from you, right? Like I feel that sometimes.
Yes.
And then that's so far from why I originally started doing it and what I love when I'm traveling. I would rather a dog come over and greet me at the door and be like, Luna, I know who you are. I saw you in the listing, you know, and be ready for that.
Yeah. It's almost like we don't know what we're looking for when we're searching through Airbnb, but we know what we need with a hotel. We need a place to be quiet, close to where we're going, a restaurant, and we're in and out. But with an Airbnb, it's like, what am I looking for? What is this vacation about? Or what is it that we're celebrating? And why am I going? Why do I feel this urge to go somewhere? And then I think it's nice to allow them to have a key code and just come in and out without being harassed and bothered. But at the same time, if we're like, this is where I would go here, or here's a local tip, or here's an experience, or just hang out by the fire.
Yes.
Whoa, there's some other part of this experience that is meaningful.
Yes. In the video business, because I've been thinking about my business a lot recently, someone pushed me and said, are you a commodity or are you a craft, right? Like anyone can put a camera on a tripod and you become like I'm just a human tripod. And with Airbnbs, I do feel like we're at that point where it's like, what are we within this world? And yours feels more like the experience. Like, am I just a place to stay? Am I a commodity in this market of like, I want a beautiful place to stay and I want to make sure there's no bugs or whatever? Or am I looking for an experience? And when I read your listing, it was the first time in a while that I'd read a listing that made me feel like I was getting an experience that someone was really thinking intentionally about. And even if you did that accidentally on your listing, like out of everything I read, that was the thing that I wrote down because I was like, I want to go stay there. I go to Maine all the time, but I want to go stay there for the experience that it's going to create that's different than my experience in Maine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think the ultimate goal and like what kind of propels me to move forward with the cottage, which is also on our lot, is to invite, you know, families, groups, gatherings. Yeah. I think that would be my ultimate goal. When someone messages me and I hope this does happen and they say, listen, I want my grandmother to come. I want my cousins to come. I want my sister's kids to come. Can we all come and stay? And we all want to have this reunion and you're welcome to be a part of it. And we want to enjoy all the things that you have. And we want to just live and breathe and enjoy each other's company. And that to me, I'm going to be like, good, settled, accomplished. Like, this is what I'm here for. I want to create that space where people can come and just be, you know, and just experience multiple generations or multiple families and just hang out. Mm-hmm. Like that's what's pushing us forward.
Mm-hmm. I feel like if there's one piece of advice I could give to any cabin owner, it would be to really articulate your vision for what you want to create, which you've done. You can picture it. You can hear what your land would sound like. if that whole family were there together, right? You can see it. You can almost smell it. What are they, you know, you can smell the campfire or the barbecue or whatever. And I feel like too often we just are looking to check off boxes. Like, is it designed nice? What color paint is it? What? And we're just replicating other things we see instead saying that none of that matters until I figured out what does it look, feel, smell, sound like when this place is humming with the energy of the people that are here having experiences.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and watching you, so we went live in July, but leading up to that was a year of just, you know, basically using you as my personal coach, whether you knew it or not.
I love that.
Okay. She's like putting herself out there. And there were times where you posted things that were, you know, I posted this and I got this response that I wasn't expecting. And, you know, I've seen you go through kind of different emotions and different days and, you know, and I've seen you post
that's
things.
Real.
And said, you know, there's different stuff. And I was like, okay, she's doing it with so much grace and so much vulnerability and so much transparency. It's like, it was okay if not everything is perfect, but they're doing it so well. It always feels welcoming and warm. And so I've just every day, almost every day, I've seen your posts or your reels and it's like, they nailed this.
I was going to say, you know that what you're doing is working though, because you came recommended to me by multiple other people. Are you still there? Can you hear me? Oh, hello.
Whoops.
That was fine. Was it just your internet?
Computer died.
Let's call it internet though.
Oh,
sorry.
That's like the story of my life. I never plug it in and it dies in the middle of important things. Like I have hard drives plugged in or something.
It was a quick changeover, right? Like pit stop. Did you time us? Because I just want to know how we compare to other guests. Like
that was really fast. You did that knowing that your computer died. And usually when you plug it in, it takes a couple minutes.
We had a second to back up. Sorry.
I love it. Okay. So we were talking about you're getting ready to host. And I was going to say that whatever you all are doing is clearly working. That's a mix between marketing. Your marketing is working.
We're working.
Because you came recommended to me by multiple other folks who were like, okay, you need to talk to Christina and Liz. They're awesome. They would be great on the podcast. So that's really, there you go. That's all it is just whoever you are and what you're creating, just owning that and sharing it. But I think that's harder for some people than others to the sharing piece. But if you can just show up and be yourself, again, just like you said in your listing, I think that's what brings people in.
I hope so.
Yeah. Your words to God's ears. We'll see. We definitely, well, I think we're, it's you. Now our beagle's eating something else.
That's what beagles do. That's literally their job. Get into trouble, Ethan.
You know, I think we're in a fortunate situation where, you know, knock on wood, where this is not like our only source of revenue, and you know, it's not like a desperate. We've spent our whole lives working. I started working at 16. I've had this like amazing opportunity to do something that maybe is a little more impactful, and maybe will last with people a little bit longer than what we've done. Not to discourage anything or discredit what we've done with our lives. But I think raising Luca there and having this sort of like a little bit of a revolving door of very unique people who are just going to come because they think it's beautiful could be a wonderful next few years before he like leaves us for college. So for us, that's, you know, I think it'll be fun. I think I'm really happy with the response we've gotten with our like amazing 324 followers or wherever we are right now. And our 22.
It only takes the right followers.
And our 22 guests who have stayed. Thank you for giving us a chance. And yeah, I think it's been a really fun experience so far. So hopefully with the cottage, it just kind of grows from there and we'll see. Hopefully this will be like a life that like works for us, you know?
Are you allowed to share more about your next steps, the plans for the cottage, the plans for your life? What can you share about that?
Talking stick.
No, you got the talking stick.
The therapist tells us, got to use the talking stick.
So with the cottage is almost ready. We've got, it's a basically a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom.
That's another 120 year old structure.
It's a 1923 with like the original wallpaper and, you know,
dark and super cozy.
It's a cute little, cozy little cottage.
Yeah, it was a three bedroom, one bath. And we added a dormer. So we added a bathroom upstairs and we added.
So you've already renovated it. It's like renovated and ready to go. 2 years.
I wouldn't say ready to go.
It's close.
Yeah, it's close.
She's going to come and she's got to furnish. We're down to the furnishings.
Okay.
But we also did like a massive extension, which was, I think it's on our Instagram. It's not very well, but it's sort of like an enclosed, what would you call it? Like a closed patio.
It's closed patio.
It feels like it's four patio. Seasons though. So we did a floor and, you know, I think it's a pretty significant addition to the living space of the downstairs, which is pretty narrow. So I think she's just got to go furnish it. When we get a break in this workflow, then she'll ship out and she'll go furnish. And, you know, I think it'll be really cute. I don't know if people will come because it's an amazing cottage. You know, honestly, I'm sure this is going to like bleed all over my description, by the way, like my self-deprecating, like not 100% sure, like that this is the cottage of my dreams, but I think it's important to be like, it's going to be very homey and you're still going to have an experience with it. So I'm curious to see like who that calls out to, you know, who that attracts.
Yeah.
But it'll be great. I mean, almost everything Liz designs is going to be, you know, interesting in some way. But
I do think that's the pressure of the very visual world we're in right now, is that it needs to be like this absolutely blow you away look. And I feel like sometimes designing with personality speaks to me more than designing like high end. Like Sarah, do you know Sarah Reed, the Secret Airy Playframe?
Yes, my lips.
Yeah.
Number one.
Yeah. So she. I love her. And I feel like that was the thing that really stuck with me about her, is that I see all these designs that look like they would all be in the same mood board, right? They're all like, you know, I don't even know how to describe them, but they all just fit in this like very nicely done, very tidy, very not a thing out of place. And then Sarah's helping me. She's doing the design for my office at home. And it's like hard to explain. Like it, like just the way she designed it just feels right. And it's a mix of like antiques and custom built and paint colors and rugs and all of that, but there's so much personality in it. And we need more designs like that. And it sounds a little bit when you're talking about the cottage.
The cottage has so much personality like on its own, because it has like the original wallpaper, which is like all this farm scene with the barn and like horses. And it's so kitschy and cool. And it's like peeling off, you know, it's like age, like you can't replicate that. And then it's got this massive stove, like this antique. What do you call that?
Like, it's like a wood stove.
It's like a wood stove, like a massive.
It's not a Queen Victoria, is it?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to look at your Instagram right now. That is my dream stove. But anyway, keep going. It has this massive stove.
Yeah, and it's like the centerpiece in the room. And it's just like, you know, it's just, and
every designer, all the designer in me, which is very small, is like, get rid of this thing. It takes too much space and like make this all clean. But it's so personal, and it's like it lends to the patina of the property. It has history there. So it's so hard though to also make a space that feels functional around this like giant massive
stone.
That's the challenge right there.
So it's proving to be you know, you have to blend sort of a bit of creature comfort, but also, you know, you said the word personality and I was thinking the word personal. For Sarah, it's so personal. When you see her page, you're like, oh, this bird looks like it came from Sarah, or this, you know, this wallpaper is like, like it emanates from her. And that's what makes it special. It's not like this contemporary mood board.
That's right. And step one of that I think I learned from Sarah and talking to her on the podcast, is in order to design that way, you have to really be in touch with yourself. And Sarah described herself in high school as very like quirky, like different, whatever. And you hear that.
Yeah.
Yes. So she just knew who she was. And she's like it is what it is. And her designs just come from that place. So I really think to design or have a space that has that uniqueness, you first of all have to know like who you are and which parts of that cottage speak to who you guys are, and then don't compromise on those. And I feel like, I don't know if a stove in the middle of the room resonates with you in the same way that it does to me. But like that has personality.
That's why I'm not the designer, because I'm still figuring out who I am.
So, yeah. Like, aren't we all? But that's the work right there, I think.
She knows.
And when we don't know who we are and what resonates with us, then we just, I mean, it makes sense. You just go to what you see and you're like, well, that's pretty and it's working for them. So I'll I'll do what they're doing.
Yeah. No, that's why she's in charge of design. I just cook the book.
Well, which leads to my next question that I had written down, that this is goes so well with it, but it's, do you think, or how do you think spaces need to be designed differently in Maine versus other places? Like, is there such thing as geographic design? I think there is, but when you think of Maine, what needs to be designed differently in Maine?
That's for you. Sounds for you, babe.
Well, I feel like the LA rentals that we had were very like sort of Instagram trendy, sort of like very hip designs. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Maine, you want to go, if I'm a traveler traveling to Maine, I sort of want like a Maine experience. I want it to be a little bit more rustic, more outdoorsy. Like I want to have that sort of cabin-y vibe. Like I feel like, you know.
You could go full geographic, which I want to do in a room where it's like the buoys and the fishing lines and like. Go deep, deep. You know, we have like a room in one of our homes where Liz went like full nautical, like the nautical brass lights and like
painting up our rooms. I've been looking at some
ocean scenes, and everyone who stays in that room is like, this is so awesome. So you could go like to a 10 on the geographic mood, but when Liz does it, you could tell it is personal. It feels good. But there is.
And it does feel like Maine has two moods, because my original designer for Cozy Rock went with originally her first mood board had more of the nautical theme. And I was like, ooh, that doesn't resonate with me at all. To your first point, Liz, when you said you wanted to go to Maine, you always go to the coast. So you went inland. That's my Maine, is inland, lakes, forests. Yeah. And so I saw this nautical stuff and I was like, oh, well, I don't actually go out on the water. I'm not like, that's not my Maine. My Maine is the woodsy lake Maine with like greens and oranges of fall leaves versus the buoys and nautical stuff.
Yeah. Well, Maine is so diverse. It feels like, you know, when in Shapley, it doesn't have a nautical vibe at all. It's all about, you know, forestation and pine and, you know, cutting down trees and the sort of like, I guess Shapley was really a town that were loggers. So you have all this like beautiful, like vintage, like tools and saws and, you know, all this stuff around that is just as rich to me as like the nautical side, but it just feels like
a world apart. And just as Maine.
Just as Maine, but a world apart. It's like she has so many different personalities. So, you know, we're trying to like blend into that, more that side of it for our kids. Yeah.
Yeah. You're in Southern Maine and it's like more diverse and more liberal. And then you go up north and it's like Trump signs everywhere. And you're like, oh, this is a
that's different place. Too. That's all like we're in Trump town in Southern Maine too. I mean, it's Portland is a nice escape. I'll just leave it at that. It's really nice to go to Portland and see a rainbow flag and be like, okay, it's our people. We can hold hands.
We drive from Cozy Rock up to the lake, and it's just like, you know, you're getting closer by the quantity of Trump signs per mile, and you're just like, you don't need to go too deep into politics, but it is, Maine is a very diverse state. It's why it's so purple, because it's like you go to a different region of it and you just see a whole different world, which is a lot of states. North Carolina is similar to that too, but it's definitely present in Maine. Okay, last question before we wrap up. What do you think makes a cabin? And I know you call one a camp and one a cottage on your property, so you don't actually use the term cabin, but I felt like you'd be a good fit for this podcast.
Thank you.
I don't know. I think I saw a definition of a cabin actually on your Instagram that kind of covered this at some point, or maybe it was one on the podcast, but it feels to me like a cabin is any space where you feel warmth and cozy. And it's got like I don't know. It's like going to your grandpa's in a way. There's like a nostalgicness to it. And I would say that would be a cabin for me. I don't know if I would define it architecturally, but
I would say cabin is a maybe size, like
small, like one room or like a few rooms. So that's like the coziness. I think of a log cabin, you know, like wood walls or, yeah, coziness, I would say coziness and size, small.
Yeah. A frame probably.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always think in my mind, I don't have a right answer for this or a wrong answer, but in my mind, I also think age has a little something to do with it. Like when I, maybe that's why when I looked at yours, it felt almost more cabin-y to me than my own, right? Because like I don't have the age factor working in my to my advantage. We have lots of wood and the size, but there isn't that history, which is why my dream for the next cabin is dead grandma's cabin, which would be like all nostalgic items and like just really maybe like,
maybe, I don't know.
Nobody likes
that's
that.
Not your subject, but you know, it's fine.
Okay, guys, this was such a treat. Thank you so much for making the time for this. We should do it once you're in Maine.
Oh,
please.
You know, for a visit please. Or for whatever.
You guys have to come
anytime, we should meet up. Please. It would be our treat.
Yes.
Thanks so much for joining us. And if you liked what you heard, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or share some of your favorite parts over on Apple Podcasts. If you have feedback or suggestions for the future, you can also find me on Instagram @CozyRockCabin. Looking forward to next week.